My thanks to Pella. If you're thinking about a new window or a new door, now is the time. Check them out online on the web at PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. And my thanks to my good friends at Runza. Best fries on the planet. Great burgers. Cheese Runza. Delicious. The food is simply fantastic. Runza makes it all better. All right, welcome back into the podcast. Appreciate everybody downloading, subscribing to the pod. If you haven't checked out the brand new YouTube channel, you gotta peep it. It is fantastic. I mean, I sometimes just come into this podcast studio and just stare at everything on the wall. I'm just so dang proud of this podcast studio. So make sure you check out and subscribe to the YouTube page as well. We got a special guest today on the podcast, former Husker offensive lineman Matt Hoskinson is going to join me. Hoss is a guy that three-time national champ. He is a native Nebraskan walk-on. He was on the Sports Illustrated all walk-on team in 1997. So he was on the 94 national title team, 95 and 97 national championship teams. This dude knows Scott Frost really well. He played with Coach Frost. He's been around him throughout, you know, his whole playing journey and now coaching journey, and his son is also on the team as well. So, I mean, who better to talk to about the team, the coaching staff, the offensive line, what he's seen from the team in the O-line and the run game through two games than Hoss? You know, I mean, this guy is the perfect guest. So let's get to it, man. Let's throw it to yours truly and former Husker offensive lineman Matt Hoskinson. Enjoy. Oh, look at him in all his glory. Matt Hoskinson, former Husker offensive lineman. He's playing with his hair. You look fine, Hoss.
You're just making sure I look good. I mean, I usually do. I was just making sure.
Yeah, you look good, man. I'm trying to gas you up here. I'm trying to get you.
Okay.
I know you will. I know you will. You got a pizza named after you. You got three national championship rings. You know how to work technology and do whatever Zoom thing this is here. Like, you've made it, man. You've made it.
I feel like I have. I feel like now I've made it because I made your podcast. Like, I've listened to your podcast. I've seen some of the jokers you've had, like JP and guys like that. And
yeah.
And to get some talent on your show.
Well, I figured, like, now that we're in the season, let's bring in the A team, right? Yeah.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah. That's what we got to do. So we're taping this on a Wednesday evening. Nebraska's 1-1. They got Buffalo this weekend. I told you I'd only keep it for about 30 minutes, so we got a lot to get to. So you ready? You want to dive in? You ready to go?
Let's rock and roll. I'm in.
So I want to start with this just real quick. Odd, even front. Explain. Can you explain? Everybody's been trying to chime in on, you know, like, I was a quarterback, but in high school, but I don't listen. I knew if there was a guy head up on the center, I know just technically what it means, but I don't, I, just like everyone else does, but you've lived it. You've blocked it. You've had to make calls on it. Everybody made a lot out of that whole, hey, we had to throw half the playbook out when they lined up in a different front. Elaborate on odd, even front and everything that happened with Frost comments after the Illinois game.
Well, let me start with this. First of all, the fans and fans of your show and our fans in general, who you know are just absolutely nuts, and that can be a good and bad thing, they need to probably wrap their minds around a word called hyperbole. So he literally did not throw his half of his book away. But what his point was is that the preparation that they had seen and felt and heard and watched and done all the work for was based on one front. And they showed a completely different front. So congratulations, you know, you duped us. He didn't have to throw half the book away. That was a comment made, you know, kind of for exaggeration. So let me start with that. I think most people know that, but we have enough crazies that, well, you know, like, some people are like, oh wow, he had to throw half the book away. I mean, what kind of offense are we running? So it is what it is. So that's that. Now here's the deal. There's a big difference between when I played and what goes on now. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm saying when I played option football, we had rules based on whether you're covered or uncovered. So I'm going to make it really, really simple. I don't want, like, because people get on the show and they get super technical and that's not for the average. They don't want to hear that. So basically, are you covered or are you uncovered? So if I'm playing center, I'm covered. I have an odd front. I call odd. It's easy. We know what to do. Okay. We know what to do based on outside zone blocking schemes and based on our inside zone blocking schemes. Okay. If it's even, meaning the center's uncovered, then we also know what to do because the rules still apply. It was really simple. It didn't matter how they lined up. It didn't matter if they stemmed to one or the other. It was a very, very simplistic, brilliant blocking scheme. And I say that because Milt Tenneper is the greatest offensive line coach of all time. I don't think it's debatable. Now, what's changed is that offenses are so much more multiple now than they were when we played. I can give you some examples, but again, I'm not going to get crazy on this. But when you talk about a very simple running play, let's call it 50. I think that's one of our running skills. So from that, there could be 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 deviations. Okay. I'm not saying this is good and I'm not saying it's bad, but there can be so many different deviations. So if you're preparing for one, what happens is that you've gone down this pathway with all these deviations and that's what you spent your time preparing for. And all of a sudden they come out in something totally different. When you have a young offensive line, it matters. Okay. It matters. So people should be able to wrap their mind around, like, of course he didn't throw away half the playbook, but the young offensive line, which they don't get to be young, they have to be good right now, but they were confused. It was a challenge. And it took them some time to kind of get out of that and figure out what plays they were trying to get going. So that's the shortest answer to a really long potential question we could talk about literally for probably an hour.
Right.
That's the way that I view it. So it threw them off. It should have been a challenge for about a quarter. And then from there, it should have been fine, which it probably was.
Right. I hear all the time people talk about offensive line takes time for it to gel and chemistry, those kinds of things. Yeah. Can you elaborate on that? What does offensive line chemistry look like? And is that true that naturally everybody is supposed to get better each game that goes, but as a cohesive, you know, five-man unit, what that process looks like as you're progressing through the season?
Yeah, I mean, great question. So offensive line synergy, I think, is critical. I mean, I've always thought that. And again, this is something that stands the test of time. This goes all the way back, predates me. When you have an offensive line, there's a reason that they call it a unit, an offensive line unit. They have to act as one, and you can't have a weak link. I mean, that's just a fact. So when you talk about the synergies and the kind of the developments that really experienced offensive lines have. So I'm thinking like Ohio State the last couple of years, they've kind of had been very senior or junior heavy guys that have been in there and they played together. They know what's going on. So if I'm playing guard and I know what my tackle does and I know what my center does, I mean, I know how they block. I know what they do. I know how they think. I know how they react. So, you know, when the bullets are flying out there literally and you know that that guy isn't going to panic, there's something to that. And so when these guys haven't played together for a long time, and again, they don't have time to not be good. They have to be good now. It's difficult for them, and it's tough. I mean, you have guys like Turner and Bryce. I mean, they're brand new. I mean, these guys haven't seen a bunch of, you know, multiple defenses and changing fronts and guys stimming and some of the stunts that they've been seeing. So this is all fairly new to them. So the ability for that line to gel and act together and think together and take some pride in what they do together – you'll know when the offensive line is doing really, really well, because you and I won't be talking about offensive line.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what have you seen through two games so far? I mean, it's, I think it's been a little bit of a mixed bag. Obviously the first game, it took them a little while to get rolling and then they got behind and now all of a sudden everything changes. Second game was much better, ran for 300 plus yards through two games. How would you characterize what you've seen from the O-line so far?
It's improvement.
Yep.
Okay. If that's a word that pops in my head, is improvement. For some reason, and I don't know the answer to this, for some reason, we are a very slow starting offensive line and have been, and I don't have the answer for that yet. I think some of the answer is related to youth and inexperience. It really is. I think that some of it is getting a feel for the game. I think some of it is related to play calling, which all of this stuff interrelates. So maybe some of the play calling isn't as aggressive, knowing the offensive line is still feeling their way through the game. I think all of those things kind of tie in. I think the inexperience in the youth, kind of that piece to it, is the reason I think they tend to start slow. So I think about the last game. Okay, Illinois, you should beat Illinois. Okay, we were physically better than them, in my opinion. They were experienced and their D-line played well. I still contend we should have won that game, but I'm thinking about the second game, and granted it's Fordham. I know people are going to say, it's Fordham, but we saw what happened throughout the country with other teams. I mean, there are some legitimate players on a lot of teams across the country. Okay. So we played really poorly in the first quarter. And I'm listening to it. I was at my middle son's football game, driving down to Lincoln, caught the second half live. From the time that I got there, and the second quarter was good too, but from the time that I got there, what I saw is I feel like they latched on to something as a group. So I'm talking about the O-line and maybe the offense entirely. They found something. They found something in a running back. They found something in a blocking scheme. They found something in the quickness with which they ran the plays. Will that continue throughout the year? Will they build on that? I really, really hope so, because I truly think they found something. And what I saw most of all was our offensive line displacing the defensive line, which to me, if you go back to simplicity, you know, the keep it simple, stupid philosophy, if I take myself and this group of four buddies that I have, and I take their D-line and I move them from A to B, B being 2 yards off the ball, that's 4 yard gain.
Yeah.
Right? You're going to get the two and you're going to fall forward for two more. You can go all the way down the field, touchdown, move on.
Right.
And I saw that more than I've seen it in the last 3 years. And I know they're working on it because I was at practice last Wednesday and they were running some things in practice that I have not seen them do before. So they are literally trying to move guys. So it's much less of a pro blocking scheme and more of a college blocking scheme.
Okay.
So if this is a change that G has chosen to kind of put into his repertoire, I guess you could say, I love it. I love it. And I think it's working.
What do you like about Greg Austin? What jumps out at you is a guy that you played for, what you said, and I agree with you, Milt Toniper, the greatest offensive line coach of all time. You were part of the pipeline. I mean, what do you see from Greg Austin?
I see some of the same qualities that Milt had. I think where Milt was there was a lot of places he was brilliant. Fully biased, acknowledge it. Okay, fully biased. I think where he was really brilliant, aside from the X's and O's, which he was really, really good at, and I can give you a million examples of that. I think what he was great at is the motivation piece. He knew how to push people's buttons, and he was the ultimate. So he combined kind of the old school, new school approach. And here's what I mean by that. He was the first guy that would get in your stuff, man. And it didn't matter if you were Outland Trophy winner or you're, some walk-on from Battle Creek. If you're doing it wrong, he's going to light you up. But he's also the first guy to give you a hug when you did it right, to acknowledge you, call you out, pump you up. Like, he knew what buttons to push. An amazing motivator, somebody that I would call it a player's coach for that reason. But it didn't matter. Like, when he got on us, it felt like you were disappointing him. It takes time for a leader to do that, whether it's business, football, or otherwise. You have to earn that. And I know he earned it over many, many years, many, many years before I was there. But we had so much respect for him that when he got on us, we felt like we were letting him down. I see some qualities in Greg that kind of are similar in that I feel like he's a player's coach. So I've seen him get on guys. I've seen him really get on guys. I think he understands the X's and O's of football very, very well. I think he knows his strengths and weaknesses. I think that's that self-awareness piece as a coach, I think, is really, really important. And not a lot of coaches, or not all coaches, I should say, not all coaches know that. That self-awareness to know, I'm not good at this piece. I think he knows what he's strong in. I think he sticks to those things. I think he teaches them well. And he's patient. It's a big group, man. I mean, I would contend that if just the O-line and D-line perform great, if they're elite level, and I said this to the guys, if they're elite, this is an 8-win team every year. You know what we become? Iowa. I hate to say it, but
that's what they are.
And they're never going to win more than that. They're never going to win 10, 12 games. They won't because they don't put all the pieces together. And quite frankly, I don't think they care. I think they want to set themselves up in the Big Ten and the Big Ten West. We're going to win 8 or 9 games, go to a good bowl game. We're going to be a top 20 team, and that's good enough. So my point to saying that is, I think those are some of the learnings that the coaches have had as they've come in and say, man, we could do it this way at Oregon, or we could do it this way at Central Florida. And now this is a different league. I need a great O-line and a great D-line. Then I start to mix in these pieces that we're getting. Now we're talking about a whole different football team.
Sure. The Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. And I want to talk to you guys about energy efficiency. And if you go into Pella's website right now, you look at it, and how about this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different types of windows or doors. By Pella, won the Energy Star 2020 Most Energy Efficient Award. That's big time stuff right there. And they achieved that in a couple of waves. They got insulated glass, which slows the heat transfer, keeping your home at a more comfortable temperature. They got types of low E glass, which is a glass coating that has been optimized for your climate. They got triple pane glass, which you can upgrade to for increased insulating airspace. And within all of that, one of the keys is proper installation, which is key for window and doors to perform at their best. And you know the Pella experts are excellent at that. Bottom line, energy efficiency matters in making your home more comfortable, and Pella windows and doors are at the top of the line when it comes to energy efficiency. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com.
One of the things you mentioned was from the second quarter on, finding a running back, because that is something that Frost has talked a ton about, and even Coach Held has said, we want to find a guy, you know, we want to find a bell cow dude. And so far through two games, they've kind of mixed a little bit of everybody in there. Who's the guy? Like who do you like so far? Do you like Marquise Stepp? Has he run the best to you so far?
I think so. I think that's the right answer. You know, to me, running back's a little bit like quarterback. If you have two, you have none.
Yeah, I agree.
You have to figure out who your guy is.
I mean,
who are you going to saddle up and ride? You have to have multiples in running backs. We know football, not just college, NFL, high school. You have to have multiple, no doubt about it. And I think we have some guys that can fill that role. I think you have to have that guy that's like, he goes out here, he's the one that can deliver the 4 to 6 yard run in kind of a bruising fashion. He's the guy that can do that. I think he separated himself a little bit in this last game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe you disagree with this, and you can tell me if you do. I personally think it's clear that Martinez is their best runner.
Yeah.
And the offense is at its best when he is running the football. Not saying you got to give him the ball 30 times or whatever, but obviously when you run Martinez, that comes with the risk of injury and comes with the risk of fumbling the ball, which Adrian's had issues with at times. How do you size all that up? Like, we're at our best when we're running him, don't want to run him too much, but we got to do what we got to do that gives us the best chance to win. There's a lot of things. I mean, you came from an era of a running quarterback that with Frost and obviously with T. Frazier before Scott took over. Like, that's an interesting thing to balance.
I'm going to give you the honest answer. I'm going to give you my gut answer here. I never have, whether it be with my kids, whether it be the youth teams that I coach, whether it be the teams that I played on, I have never concerned myself with injury. But I have that luxury, okay? Look, I'm not coaching Nebraska football. I'm coaching sixth grade junior Storm. If I lose a game, nothing happens, right? Nobody says anything. Nothing. You know what I mean? So in fairness, that's the truth. But I have never concerned myself with injury. I would, if it were my team, I would never put a green jersey on a quarterback. I would let him feel a little bit of bumps and bruises in practice. Not all the time, you know, put a penny on him, you know, and some of your team stuff. But when you have your one-on-one, like, let him get hit a few times. If that's your best pathway to winning, you know what we never did? Scott didn't wear a jersey. Tommy didn't wear a jersey. I mean, they would take a few pops, especially in our one-on-one stuff. But those were big, strong, physical guys, and they never got hurt. I mean, they just never, not even so much as a bump or a bruise. And so that's something, again, I understand clearly I'm an old guy. I'm, you know, 46, and so I have an old philosophy. But if you get hurt, you get hurt. And we we're not there from a depth standpoint to have that next man up mentality, but you have to have that next man up mentality. So somebody always tends to step up. And if they choose to run him too much and he happens to get dinged up, then you have to have faith that the next guy can kind of carry it through.
Yeah. I think you got to do what gives you the best chance to win.
I agree. Look where we're at right now. I mean, we are at a point right now, and I love this staff, okay? And so I'll throw this, try to do it once, but I'll throw this one caveat. I'm fully biased, right? I've known Scott for a long time. I know this staff well. I'm biased. Plus, I'm a Husker. So I'm that guy. But I will tell you, like, we are closer than people think. I mean, we really are. When you consider now we're consistently losing, and eventually you have to win those 3 and 4 point games, but they're all over. Like, if you haven't seen progress in the last 3 years, you're not really looking. You're not looking hard enough. So having said all of that, this is major college Division I football. We are Nebraska. You got to win the game.
Right.
Yeah. So put your best foot forward. If it's your running quarterback, then, you know, maybe a couple of times he has to hook slide instead of barreling into people. Because I'll tell you right now what we used to say to Scott. It's actually a cool, quick story, but this is my junior year, his first start. Okay. So this is maybe the second or third series of the game. He runs option, keeps it, kind of slithers his way for about a 10 yard gain and runs out of bounds. He probably could have cut up field for maybe another two. There's a guy there, you know, and he comes back to the huddle and Aaron Taylor lit him up. He's like, hey, that might've been cute at Stanford, but here we tuck our shoulder and we run the guy over for 2 more yards, like flat out on the field, next play coming in.
Love it.
Fast forward about next series, He breaks another one, and he's kind of running down the sideline. It should have been a touchdown, but like a 40-yard touchdown. He actually turns back to the middle of the field, finds the safety, and just runs his safety over. It kind of falls forward, you know, and he comes back, and he's high-fiving, and everybody's celebrating and everything. He comes back to the huddle and looks at Taylor, and he's like, hey, what'd you think of that? And Taylor's like, it was pretty awesome, but I probably would have just got the touchdown on that.
Right.
So my point is, like, we, you know, Scott was a bull, man. Like, let these guys be bulls and let the chips fall where they may. I mean, we got to put it out there this year. That's my opinion.
Yeah. I, you know, I mean, there's a, the, remember the block he threw in the Tennessee National Championship game?
Fearless, man.
I mean, fearless, you know, so,
the dude's a winner, though. And I mean, we can probably talk about Adrian, but. Like Scott just, he has a winning mentality. That's what's so hard for him right now. Like, he's never been in a position like this.
Oh yeah. What's that? I wanted to ask you about that because it's hard. I mean, I'm one of my best friends in the world is Barrett Rood. So there's that balance of like, I mean, he's the linebackers coach, like giving him space with showing him support. What's that been? Now Barrett's not the head coach. He's not Scott Frost. Like, you're close with Scott. You played with him. What's your relationship been like with him in trying to, like, hey, do you just kind of do that, hey man, I'm here if you need me kind of a thing? Or what's happening?
It's a great question. When we have conversations, what I tell him is if there's anything that I can do to help, I say it to G too, if there's anything that I can do to help, I'm here to help. I've been a Husker for 46 years. Mm-hmm. So day I was born, I got onesie pictures. I played there. Like, I'm a Husker and I always will be.
Right.
I'll do anything I can to help. So I'm more of that. I'm that ear for him, you know, and I feel like I can kind of, you know, he hears all the noise and he's there at the stadium and you can't not hear this. It's too loud. You know, there's too much going on and too much social media today. So I feel like I get to be kind of that level head where it's, hey, listen, it's, you know, you got a very vocal minority. This is not the bulk of Nebraska fans that are out here complaining and whining and, you know, all that type of stuff. It's not the majority,
right?
But here's some things, you know, if asked, I'm going to give him my opinion. And sometimes he does. So sometimes he might ask, whether it be how we do things or how he's doing things, or it could be anything from leadership, you know, being in a business and talking kind of leader to leader stuff. I mean, we kind of just bounce ideas off of each other. And it's kind of it's a cool thing to have a guy that, you know, as well as I know Scott, be in that position and kind of understand what's going on and understanding the challenges that he's faced since he's come here. Right. And it's interesting. I mean, it's a lot, and a lot of people don't know everything because he's not going to share it all.
No. I mean, I could, the amount of pressure that guy's on is just, it's crazy, you know, and that's gotta be hard as a, you know, you're wearing a lot of hats. You're a friend. He's a former teammate. You know, that's a challenging thing for you to have to balance. What is fair criticism? Like, if you had to look at everything, is it just the fact that, hey, they haven't won? Like, I mean, I think, is that the only thing that's fair? Is there, cause how do you see that? Cause I'm sure, like you said, there's bullets flying from everywhere and questioning this and this and this. What's fair? What's not?
It's a great question. I don't think I have the full answer, but I'm gonna do my best on this one. So one, the obvious one, you got to win more. That's something we talk about. He knows. I mean, you're not telling him something he doesn't know, for God's sakes. I mean, win more. You got to win more ball games. We can't continually shoot. And the problem is it's not that people have just beaten us. It's we've beaten ourselves. It's
no question.
This penalty, this turnover, this fumble, this muffed punt, this missed onside kick, like little things that are massive, massive in key critical times. It's amazing how when you're not playing well and not winning, how bad luck follows, right?
Right.
And it's amazing how the reverse works. It's amazing when you're winning, how good luck follows. And so, I mean, a fair criticism is you gotta win. You gotta find a way to win some of those games. A fair criticism is he's made some statements that, you know, we haven't been able to back up yet. And for me personally, like as a former player, I love him. Every one of them. I love it because he kind of came in with, it's part of why we loved him. Aside from being an alum and being a great football coach, he had some edge to him. Mm-hmm. I don't want him to lose that edge. I don't, because his belief in what he and his staff are doing is still there. It's not, that part hasn't wavered. I like that piece, but I think a fair criticism is too much. You know, you've said too much. That's fair. I mean, because you haven't backed it up yet.
Right.
So I think that's fair. I mean, there's just some ridiculous ones out there. Right. I mean, the guy didn't forget how to coach.
Yeah.
You know? And And I would also tell you that in fairness, and again, sorry, I have to give the caveat, biased guy.
Yeah.
How much more coaching can you give when a kicker misses two extra points? I mean, is that coaching? Is it coaching when I'm just giving examples. I'm not saying these happen, but when a quarterback goes the wrong way or a lineman whiffs on a block, is that, I mean, some people could say, yeah, that's technique. Well, you know what? We whiffed on blocks back in the day, too. We just had so many good players. I had Amon Green running behind me, so Amon just probably slipped him and ran and didn't make me work back. You know what I'm saying? So we're not there yet, but there's only so much you can put on the coaches. Eventually, the boys got to make plays.
Exactly.
And they have to do it on the field. That's it. It's that simple.
Yeah. I mean, and listen, I love him, and I'm so glad he came back for his super senior year in Cam Taylor-Britt, and I really hope this season ends well for him because I think he's a talented dude. But, I mean, do you think they coached him to go catch the ball at the one-inch yard line? You know what I mean? Like, they didn't coach him to do that. He made a mistake. And so that's where it gets to be challenging because I hear some people talk about like, oh, I wonder if these players are questioning their coaches when they continually lose. Like if your players are thinking that, I think they're kind of losers because they should question themselves first. Like at least that was my mentality. Like if we went out and lost a game, I didn't think Dane Altman, Bill Self, where I was, man, they don't know what they're doing. I first looked in the mirror, you know, and so I get it. Like there has to be that confidence player to coach to player. But I think everything starts with looking in the mirror first. And some of the stuff, like you said, missing two extra points, the safety in the first game. Like, I don't know what you're really supposed to do with some of that stuff.
But it's not coaching. You can make a tie that now being a leader, he's going to say that's on me. We got to do better. Like those are the things that coaches say. But again, I expect people to have a reasonable brain when they hear a coach talk. When they hear a coach say we had to throw out half the playbook, reasonable people don't believe he threw out half the playbook.
50% of his plays.
It's the dumbest thing I've ever – like, it's so incredibly – I actually saw some fans say, oh, my God, look at Mackenzie Milton. He's playing so well. Why didn't we get him? I mean, that's on Frost. This is a dude that – Mackenzie Milton even playing football is akin to hitting a 10-team parlay in football.
Yeah, like, it's a miracle.
It doesn't happen ever.
Right.
So he came back. Congratulations. Like, you would never do that. But we're so – and I'm not blaming all of our fans, by the way. There's frustration, right? Sure. I mean, in fairness, there's frustration. So there's frustration. Like I heard the comments in the first quarter of the last game, and like it was like everybody was ready to jump off the edge because they're ready for the shoe to drop. Well, you know what? We're going to play another game against Buffalo, and it's probably going to be tied a little bit. I still think if we do what we did against Fordham, I think we're going to roll them. But look what happened throughout the country. Look at Tulane almost beating Oklahoma. How does that happen? This is a team, Oklahoma, that might be the most loaded in terms of talent, maybe in the country. That's why people have them ranked so high. So that happened. San Jose State almost beats USC. I mean, there's a ton of Wisconsin losing at home. There's a ton of things that you can look at and say, college football is a little different than your dad's college football, the one that I played in. So you still have your elite, but if you're not in that top little tiny echelon, there's an opportunity that you're going to get your butt beat on any given Saturday. Again, if people are – I'm not trying to make excuses. I'm saying this is not your dad's college football. Other than the top three, four, five teams, maybe, anybody can be beaten. I mean, crazy things. UCLA beating LSU and San Jose State almost beating USC and, like, just these crazy things that you're not used to seeing. You know, Tulane almost upsetting Oklahoma. They get a first down on their drive. Who knows? They might end up winning that game.
No doubt.
So there's just some crazy stuff that have happened. And I think with where we are as a program, again, it just goes back to get to a bowl game this year. Just get to a bowl game.
Yeah,
that's progress.
It's
progress.
Right. Totally agree. Get to 6-6. Get to a bowl game. Maybe you go win a bowl game, and then you start building it. So that's how I've seen it. When you look at let's talk about Juergens for a second, because if I'm not mistaken, you played center and guard, right?
Yes.
Now, I'd imagine you guys didn't operate a ton out of the gun.
Not a lot.
Not a ton, but I guess the snap thing, it's been better. There was one errant one at the Illinois game. How do you see the snap issue with Juergens as a former lineman?
Improved significantly.
Okay.
I don't want to say it's a non-issue. It's never a non-issue, but if you're snapping shotgun snaps, we run roughly 70 plays a game from about the midpoint of last year until – you know, now the first two games of this year, I think he's had, I'll call it 1.5 bad snaps. And so there was a technique issue and it was fixed and he's got it now. I mean, it's comfortable for him. So it's not coming back 100 miles an hour. He looks comfortable over the ball. He's relaxed. He's preparing the right way. So I think it's a non-issue now. The kid is an amazing football player.
Yeah, how good is he? Talk about that. As so, like, because everybody talks about, hey man, that dude, like, once he gets the snap right, like, that dude is a monster. What do you see with Juergens when he's right?
Just a physically gifted center. I mean, he's big. He doesn't, like, he put on the weight and didn't get sloppy. He got strong. You know, he rolls around practice with his gut out, and, you know, I like to flip him some crap about that, but he's still got the tight end in him. But
sure.
The dude looks, he looks great. I mean, he's super strong. He's smart. He knows the system. He knows what he's trying to get done. He can move a guy. He's got some nasty to him. What I want and what I really hope is that his nasty can wear off on some of the other guys. I think that will come as they are, you know, I've said this about every level of football, from youth all the way up to the NFL. Until you know 100%, almost involuntarily, like breathing, until you know where you're going on every play and there's nothing the defense can throw at you, my contention is you can't go 100%. Mm-hmm. I think you would think the same thing about, think about your time at Kansas or Creighton. Totally. One. Until you really knew the offense and what you were doing, how can you go 100%?
Right.
So I think it's really critical that, first of all, they get their nose in the playbook and make sure they know it like the back of their hand. But secondly, they got to develop a little bit of nasty, and Cam has that. Sichterman has that. He's got some nasty to him too. I think that a couple other guys, as they're learning, the young guys need to develop that. I think that's a really important component to being an offensive lineman.
Sure. Mindset. The Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by my good friends at Runza. Everybody that knows my athletic background, you know, as a quarterback in high school. But, you know, I believe in establishing the run game. And even more than that, I believe in establishing the Runza game. That's an original Runza cheeseburger, some onion rings, double dipped in a homemade batter, little bit of a pop to top it off. You know, in football, you establish a run. But at lunch, you establish the Runza. It's just that simple. So get out to Runza today and establish the Runza game, or check out the delicious salads. You got the chicken bacon ranch salad, sweet berry chicken salad, and my personal favorite, the Southwest chicken salad. You got to get out to Runza, establish a Runza game, or get a salad. Either way, you are going to leave satisfied. Runza makes it all better. A couple more things. I know you got to run here in a few minutes. I want to go back to something you said, you know, from the second quarter on. You talked about finding a running back and then finding, mm-hmm. I don't know, you didn't use the word identity, but you said that Coach Austin and that offensive line kind of found something that works. Can you elaborate on that? Because I think when Scott first got here, you thought it was going to be spread out speed. And I think they're now, you hear some comments from whether it's the O-line or Marquis Stepp of trying to be a little bit more downhill, physical, run it right at you. Do you think the offense in the run game has found quite what it wants to be yet?
I think the term that I use is I think they found something.
Okay.
Okay. And I want to be clear that I don't think this is all of a sudden going to be the best offense in the country. I don't think that, but I think they found something in quarters 2 through 4 against Fordham that they can use literally the entire year. And that thing that they found is a running back that can run downhill, linemen that are willing to displace defensive linemen, to move them from A to B, move them down the field to create running lanes, and even to create positive runs where they're not so positive. So 3-yard gains. And then what I saw, like taking that a step further, is when you develop that, if you go back and you really watch the film, and I didn't go watch the film, I watched it live. But when you go back and look at it, if anybody does, look at what happened to Adrian. All of a sudden, he had time. We had quick throws. We had receivers running open. The middle of the field was open, the tight end game. So I think if they can do this, if they can do exactly what they did in quarters 2 through 4, and they can do it, by the way, if they can run this power in your face, moving defensive linemen, downhill running, physical football, we will be better than, I'll call it, the peers that we have in the Big Ten, the Iowas, the Northwesterns, the Michigan State. We'll be better than them because they don't have that. Right. Iowa throws only to their tight ends and running backs. You know, we know what Iowa wants to do. We have the ability to change that. We can throw it to wide receivers. We throw it down the field. And look how smooth Adrian looked. So for all the criticism that young man has gotten, and some of it is deservedly so, he was really, really good. Again, it was Fordham. I understand that. But he was really good against
Fordham. I'm with you.
Really good.
I thought he looked good. You know, it's funny. You told that story about, was it Aaron Taylor that yelled at Scott?
Yes.
Yeah, so you tell that story. It sounds like in the Fordham game, Martinez kind of yelled at the lineman early in the game. Sounds like there was a little bit of conflict, which I think is good. But I always think that relationship between a quarterback and the O-line is a special one.
It is.
When you heard that, what did you think about that? Because Adrian's a guy, he's a captain, he's a four-year starter. Like, he's probably got the cred to be able to kind of get in some of these young guys' face and light them up a little bit.
It should have made them feel connected is what it should have done. And I'm not saying that it hasn't. I'm hoping that that was the end result. I would love to see a little more conflict on the sideline. I would love to see more conflict in practice. I mean, Jason probably told you, like, we fought every practice, every single practice fighting on the field.
Right.
And we didn't like those guys. We didn't like the defense. It was us against them. That was the competition. Then we got in the locker room and things were fine. Like, there was never a problem. We understood the difference between being between the lines and being in the locker room. We were able to make that clear delineation. But I'm telling you, man, in games, if we didn't score or something like that, it'd be Jason or Grant that'd be looking over us like, don't worry about it. We'll go three and out, give you another chance.
Right.
Don't worry about it. Take your time scoring. Or if it was vice versa and we're putting up points and they're allowing some drives, like, hey, you want to get us a ball back sometime today? Like, we'd like to score again. I mean, those conversations happen in the game.
Right.
So that conflict, if you have relationship, that's the key, is you have to have relationship. You have to have earned that. I wasn't going to say anything as a freshman, sophomore, like when I wasn't really playing. I would never do that. But once you have that relationship, you can have those types of conversations. That conflict will bring them closer together.
A couple more things, you're out of here. I'm curious. I don't know if you've thought about this, but because I walked on at Kansas, you were a walk on at Nebraska. Where is the walk on's place in college football is with the transfer portal? Is it in a better place? Is it in a worse place? Is it the same to you? I'm honestly like, I didn't know how to answer the question. I'm not totally sure. As someone that, you know, look, I mean, like, you were a guy that earned, I mean, Sports Illustrated all walk-on team 1997. Like, you were a guy that, like, were the poster child. Like, you can be Hoskinson to these other walk-ons. Yes. Like, what's the walk-on's place in 2021 with everything that's kind of changed in recruiting?
That's a really good question. First, I guess I'll start with, I hate the transfer portal. So I hate everything about it. I think it makes it – now – so one could argue that, you know, schools get to do what they want. They could cut a kid. They could do this. And it happens, but it's rare. I mean, it's rare that a scholarship kid that is asked to leave. I mean, it happens. Mm-hmm. But if they're doing all the right things and they're putting their best foot forward, and they're going to class and doing the right stuff, it's rare that they ask them to leave. So I don't think it's a one-for-one argument. I think we've created a free agent atmosphere with the transfer portal. You can just kind of go wherever and do whatever you want. So I think your question's valid, because if you are that walk-on, and my son's a walk-on right now, so if you're a walk-on and he's not going to play early, he needs to develop. He was more like me. Like, I need to be in the system and get bigger, stronger, faster, and, you know, have a chance to play, you know, maybe late in my sophomore year into junior, senior year. So what happens when a guy leaves and all of a sudden a center becomes available and the guy he's, you know, just a badass and, like, you want to pick him up? Like, there it is. Like, so I think your question's valid, because it could limit the ability for walk-ons to do that. But I don't think there is not a place. That's a horrible sentence, but I think there is still a place for walk-ons in this game,
right,
especially here. I think if this is card horse argument though, right? I mean, so you got to start winning. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you start winning, we don't know what happens with these in-state recruits. Maybe they come, maybe they don't. Some kids just want to do whatever it is that they want to do. They want to leave the state. They want to do whatever. Tip your cap and move on. And that's fine. It's okay, folks. It's okay if we have some guys that leave the state. I mean, congratulations, young man. Go have fun. But I think once we start consistently winning, we'll see that change and we'll be able to get more walk-ons. We'll be able to get those fringe guys like I was that, hey, come here, earn your scholarship, earn it. And then you're given the opportunity to do that. And then you're playing for your dream school. I saw somebody posted something today about that. Like, what do you choose? You choose a scholarship to South Dakota, or do you choose the walk-on at Nebraska? And I will tell you on this podcast the same thing I've said to everybody in the world. You know what I, as an adult man, have never, ever, ever said and will never say? Man, what if I'd have went to South Dakota? Would I have played for 4 years? Never. But mm-hmm. if I had went to South Dakota, you know what I would always say for the rest of my life? I could have been on the greatest run that college football has ever seen.
Right.
I could have three national championship
games. Right.
I mean, you're never going to look back and say, what if? It's those guys that won't put themselves out there. Those are the ones. I mean, you and I are probably in the same boat. You could have played at a million lower tier Division I schools, D2 schools, started for 4 years. You put yourself out there and went to your dream school.
Yep.
And then you came back and you played Division I basketball at Creighton.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have went to a smaller school and dominated, but you wanted to put yourself out there against the best.
Right.
Some guys still want to do that. And I think for that reason, there'll always be a place for walk-ons.
Matt Hoskinson, I told you we'd be out by like, here we are, it's 5:15. So, hey, we're in season. We're bringing the A team out. We're bringing the first stringers.
About. I knew I'd get on here eventually. Like, I feel like I've made it now. I feel like I've made it.
you have, my friend. You absolutely have. Hey, thank you for your time. I know you're super busy with the fam and the kids and all that. Let's catch up again here maybe in the season. All right, pal?
Anytime. Invite me to the one with the wine. I'm a wine guy. Like, I'll do the wine thing with you guys.
You want to do that? Don't tempt me. I will. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'll bring some. You know, I'm not just going to show up empty-handed.
Okay. You bring the wine. We'll pop the cork. We'll get it going. All right, bud.
Got this.
All right. Thanks, Haas.
All right, bud. Appreciate it. A Huda Media Production.